Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, that's the sound of partying on the streets of Argentina in 2022, just after they won the World Cup. And there, in the middle of it all, after a year-long trip around Central and South America, was off the ball's Owen Shane. And while you may think that just seeing the party in Argentina was quite enough, Owen saw much, much more, which he's documented in his new podcast, Diverted. And he's with me now. Owen, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I remember when you were setting off. We thought we'd never see you again.
I know. I never thought this podcast would see the light of day again, to be honest with you, because this was a sort of a germ of an idea way back then. And it's taken a couple of years to get it put together and out into the world. So I'm very, very happy it's here.
Now, was it your ambition when you set off to be in Argentina in the expectation of that win?
Yes, but you're after rubbing salt into the wounds here, Pat, because what you heard there was where I was supposed to be. But I ended up being nowhere near Argentina when the biggest party in the world was actually happening. I wasn't even in the Southern Hemisphere when it was happening. I had one job, which was to be in Argentina for that. And I managed to screw up my one job. But I managed to get a whole pile of other stories.
But you did so many other things. Now, tell me about the Tinku Festival in Bolivia.
So this is from this week's episode of Diverted. This is the craziest sports event I have ever attended in my life. This is essentially a ritualistic fighting festival where in this tiny town called Macha, high in the mountains in Bolivia, these indigenous tribes come together and their ambition is to spill blood for Pachamama, or to Mother Earth, to you and I. And to satisfy Mother Earth, she wants to drink the blood of the local populace. And in return, she will grant you a good harvest for the season coming ahead. So I went along to Macha to see what the hell was this thing. And as you can imagine, not a whole pile of English speakers around the place. But I did manage to find one man called Remberto, who was visiting from La Paz. And he managed to explain to me in English what was going on.
What have you heard about this festival?
That they fight each other. And some people in the past, they choose to die. So
you say that they choose to die?
Some of them, because for them it's not something bad. If somebody die, for the whole community is like an offering for Pachamama, to say thank you for what they have in life, the products, all this stuff.
Do you think there is a danger of that happening to one of us today, that you could be randomly attacked or no?
Probably. Probably. Most of these people, they don't like to be taking pictures by the strangers, you know, and they are drunk. So you need to be careful, of course, all the time. Some of them, they are drinking, they don't like pictures and they will punch you.
Is it more dangerous for us as gringos?
Probably, yes.
So you were expecting something to happen. At what hour of the day did it begin?
Well, it actually began the previous night, where there's this opening ceremony. They play this music, they do this traditional dance, and you show back up the next morning. And what you immediately realize when you show back up is that a lot of the old men in particular hadn't gone to bed. They had continued to drink throughout the night. So there's this different edge to town early the next morning, where there's these stragglers who are kind of a little bit dangerous, but also they drank so much to the point where they're not really a massive danger. The tribes start coming into town, they start flowing in, and the main plaza starts to get completely overcrowded. Hours and hours go by. We'd been there since 8 a.m. This is now midday at this point, and there hasn't been any fighting just yet. However, We saw one flashpoint. There was a whip that was produced. A man was whipping another man and then he punched him back. And then this is how the police reacted.
There's a tangle of tribes in front of us and some of the men have whips. They're supposed to be used on their own people to get them into shape, to move and to dance. But there's a man clearly using his whip as a weapon here. A couple of men begin to throw punches and it looks like the first all-out brawl of the day. I go off and I get a closer look, but as soon as I get there, this cloud of white gas starts billowing towards me.
Tear gas is out.
You can taste the tear gas.
Oh my God, I can actually feel it. That is harder.
Go, guys. Go. Oh.
Keep going.
I've run away to a side street and then up a hill to get to the outskirts of the town.
So what were they chanting there?
I don't know specifically, but it was some sort of tribute to Pachamama and this Andean goddess that they worship.
Now, the idea is to spill blood,
yes.
And they do not discriminate. They don't require one of their own tribe's blood to be spilled. Anyone will do.
Correct. Now, the reason why the police were using tear gas there is because they want to get control of the situation. They don't want, in the daytime hours, these tribes fighting one another without a correct referee. The referee should be the policeman. And they are all policemen in this situation. So they try and create these circles and they try and have this one-on-one combat where punching is allowed, no kicking. If somebody hits the ground, the policeman will pull you off. So a safe environment for the fighting. Now, their shifts end once the sun goes down and then all bets are off after dark. However, if you go off into one of those side streets, as I described, you're taking your life into your own hands.
So you might be chosen as one of the potential combatants.
Well, let's just say this is how I tell the story in the documentary.
I run down one of these streets and see an entire tribe run in my direction. So I pull in and wait inside a door frame and hang there until they've all gone past. I pop back out and I continue down the street. And that's when it happens. There is an old man about 10 feet away from me. And I make eye contact with him. And he runs towards me. And he throws a right hook. And I just dodge it. I turn around to face him, and he's going for it again. I jump back to evade it, and I start to run away. And he sweeps his leg to trip me. But somehow, that also misses. Some other locals have seen me and start chanting, "Gringo, gringo, gringo." But I continue to run, and I keep on running. I'm not sure if I'll ever forget that split second where I made eye contact with that man, as he was pulling back his hand and turning it into a fist. He was tiny and looked about 70. I'm not quite sure when he lost his two front teeth, but there was this sort of dryish film of blood setting on his lower lip, and it looked like he'd been fighting already. But when he saw me, obviously he wanted some gringo blood. My mentality, though, was flight or flight. I was not hanging around for that.
Gringo picking on an old man. Oh, come on. Now, your adventures took you far and wide. You went hitchhiking through Patagonia.
Yes, I got bored of taking buses around the place, so I decided to back myself and stick my thumb out on the side of the road, which was a disastrous decision in some ways, but it actually feeds into the storyline in other ways. I ended up spending a lot of time with the family of Alexis McAllister as a direct consequence of bikers that I met while stuck in a shack in the middle of a desert in Patagonia. So it does feed into the storyline of this. And to be honest with you, even though you are in desolate situations at times, it's one of the greatest ways to travel, I must say, because you're not quite sure who you're going to meet or what way your method of travel is going to be.
Tell me about the Welsh of Patagonia.
So this is a Welsh colony that exists in a few small towns on the Atlantic side of Argentina. Welsh settlers were invited in the mid-19th century by the Argentinian government at that time in what was a quite racist move in terms of conquering Patagonia. Patagonia had been looked after at that time by the indigenous populations. They were forced out, and the white people of Britain were brought in and they settled there. And their culture is unbelievably strong. You walk around these towns, like the town of Gaiman is probably the strongest Welsh town, and there are tea houses and Welsh dragons outside every building. The children there are speaking more Welsh now than their parents or their grandparents did. And there's a real Welsh, I wouldn't call it a revival because it's always been there, but there's a real strengthening of the Welsh culture in Patagonia. You'd be better off having you'd be easier having a conversation in Welsh than in English in some of these places, which is remarkable. I was walking through one of the towns one day and I saw St. David Association. And I thought to myself, there's a story here. So,
and that's, do they play rugby?
Absolutely they do. In fact, the Wales national team went down to Patagonia to play a test in 2013. I think it might have been one of Alan Wynne-Jones's first games. So it was probably earlier than 2013. They played in Puerto Madryn. And so they have played a game down in Patagonia, and Welsh people are very aware of this. But it's very unusual. You hear names such as like Juan Jones or Rhys Carlos, whatever, and all this combination of quite Hispanic and Welsh names inform the fact that this culture exists.
You came across a team with resonance of Palestine.
Yes, so this is Club Deportivo Palestino, a football team in Santiago in Chile. This was told in last week's episode. This was a team that was set up in 1920, but the Palestinian community in Chile largely comes from the 19th century, which is a wave of Christian migration to South America. Chile actually is the largest population, has the largest population of people with Palestinian descent outside of the Middle East, anywhere on planet Earth. And they play in the Palestinian colours. They were embroiled in a big controversy back in 2011 when they changed the number one in all of their jerseys to the pre-1948 Palestinian map. And the Jewish community in Chile didn't take that too kindly, but it's since become an iconic jersey in Chilean sport, really.
Now, so many adventures you had, you actually came across one of the survivors of that famous or infamous Andean plane crash where cannibalism was involved.
Yes, exactly. Cannibalism isn't always the phrase that they like to use. Necrophagy is what I was told is the correct phrase to use around this. This was quite a curt, I will say, museum director who I interviewed, and it felt like a job interview because he wasn't willing to give me the contacts for the plane survivors unless I didn't screw up the interview with him. But thankfully, after that conversation, he did give me a contact for Antonio Vizentin. So there's an extended interview next week in the home of Antonio Vizentin, who's one of the survivors of the plane crash. He's really interesting on the act of necrophagy. It still haunts him to this day. I made the point to him, you would be dead unless you engaged in the act of necrophagy. He says that it leads to a very difficult relationship between him and some of the families of some of the survivors, or some of the people who died on the mountain, I should say. And I've met one of the family members as well, and she lost a brother on the mountain, and she finds it difficult to speak to the survivors. But there's an interesting Irish angle to this as well. They all played on the rugby team Old Christians in Montevideo. They were all former pupils of the Christian Brothers School in the Carrasco district of Montevideo, Christian Brothers from Ireland. So Antonio, when we talk about the mountain, he also tells me about these Christian Brothers playing hurling at lunchtime in their school.
How many episodes of the podcast altogether?
10. We're into week 3 now, so we're three-tenths of the way into the series.
And you're off again.
Yeah. Well, I'm just popping away on a quick jaunt to Australia, but thankfully, I won't be producing any content. People will be happy to hear.
All right. Owen Shane from Off the Ball. The podcast is called Diverted. You can get it on Go Loud and elsewhere, wherever you get your podcast. Owen, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a million, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.